Welcome to the Maple Minds podcast. Sorry, we're a little bit late today. So much going on. We are live every Tuesday and Friday, 1 o'clock Pacific, 4 o'clock Eastern. And normally what we do is normally we talk about some federal politics, some BC politics, and some international politics. But let's be real, we are 6 days away from our federal election. So all we're doing is talking about federal politics all today and probably on Friday as well. I'm Christy. That is Sherry. That's Polly. And we're just three Gen X ladies from BC who like to talk about politics. And this morning, we were given the gift of the conservative costed platform. So before we get into it, I just want to talk about what a costed platform is versus there's a lot of people who said, if they haven't been giving us their platforms, what have we been listening to for the last month? And before that, all these promises, isn't that their platform? The costed platform is there. This is how we're going to pay for it. This is where we're going to get the money to pay for all the things that we just promised you. So the Liberals and the NDP had released theirs already, and everybody was waiting for the guy who kept begging for an election forever, who you'd think would be ready, but wasn't. But he released his this morning. That's what we're talking about. Now I'm giving it to Sherry.
Yeah, the difference between the platforms is like night. It's the difference between a high school project and a university level thesis. Like, honestly, the Liberal platform is 67 pages long. It has a full website all on its own. It's called Canada Strong. You can go. It's broken down. It's got a table of contents. It's got headers. It's got a fully costed plan, like 4-page PDF file of numbers for all you numbers nerds out there. It breaks it down specifically into what category they're going to be, what's going to cost what in each category. They're also planning to do, the Liberals are planning to do something different that's more in line with accounting principles and transparency, is that they're going to actually shift the budget to operational and capital expenditures, which I think is really smart. Anybody who has a business, has a corporate business or a sole proprietorship, knows that there's a difference between operational spending and capital expenditures. And the CRA looks at them differently too, because a capital expenditure invests into the country and into the taxpayers, whereas an operational expense is just keeping your lights on and your heat on. Those are expenses that you have to have in order to live, whereas your capital expenditures, to break it down into more of a household kind of idea, an operating expense would be like your hydro, your gas, your cable, any bus passes, all that kind of stuff. Whereas capital expenditures would be like your house, a boat, your vacation house, anything like that. So what they're planning to do going forward is they're going to adjust the budgets to reflect both those streams of spending, so that we understand what's being invested and what's not.
And I think that there is a difference. I had disagreed with some people before when Mark Carney first came onto the scene and he talked about we need to spend less and invest more. And some people had mocked him for saying that because they were suggesting that spending and investing mean the same thing. They both mean money leaving, but they both have different outcomes. And when we talk about like a capital expenditure, like a house, your house increases in value. It's not that a capital expenditure is just for something that's really big, like a bigger purchase than paying your hydro bill or buying a new pair of socks. It is something that is going to increase in value, where the other things that you're spending money on, you're not getting the dollars back. You're getting something else back for them.
Exactly. It's the difference between going out for dinner and eating on your credit card to putting like a down payment for a house on your credit card. One is that idea of good debt versus bad debt, which is the backbone of financial planning, right? It's okay to borrow to invest, but it's not okay to borrow just to pay off consumer debt, right? There's two different types of debt, and one will actually grow your investment, and the other one just is, you might as well set fire to it because you're never going to see it again.
Yeah, it's like when I talked a lot about, oh my gosh, why it's escaping me now, compound interest.
Yeah.
About how you can take advantage of compound interest to build wealth. But on the other side of that, if you have debt, if you have bad debt, that also collects compound interest, but like in a bad way.
Yeah. And this is all to segue into the point I want to make, which is that one party has a lot of capital expenditures they want to do and investments into Canadian infrastructure in a variety of industries, whereas the other one, other than three military bases in the Arctic, there isn't a ton of capital investing in the taxpayer or in the country. It's all about cuts and austerity. And I think our audience probably know which is which, right?
If you
want to guess in the comments, which is which. I was looking at the Liberal platform before we came on here, and there's a really good graph that shows, like, in 2021, 65% of the budget was going to operational expense and only 34.8% was going into capital expense, and our debt was 2.5%. In 2025, under Carney's plan, what's going to happen is the operational spending will be reduced to 33%. The capital expenditure piece will expand to 64.8%, and the debt spending will be at 2.8%. And with the Conservative platform, they want to spend $75 billion on tax cuts that will maybe put an extra $1,000 in your pocket at the end. If you're a two-income house, you'll save up to, they estimated will save up to $1,800 a year, but that's not going to kick in until 2028 fully. That's a graduated, it's not immediate.
But there's a lot of people who, the way he's communicating it, there's a lot of people who think, hey, if this guy comes in, I'm paying 15% less next tax season.
Yeah.
And that's not the way it's going.
No. And Carney's is immediate because it's only 1%, and it's a much more manageable, and it doesn't cost as much as the Conservative studs. It's 5.4, but Carney's also going to expand the social safety net with social housing, housing for seniors, housing for students. He's going to increase the OAS payment. He's going to invest in mental health supports and addiction supports with Housing First initiatives for those who are suffering from addiction. He just announced that on the weekend. So he's investing a lot into us and into various industries to catalyze private sector investment as well, in order to grow our economy and create more revenue in our economy. Pierre's doesn't do that. He says it does, but it doesn't. His relies a lot on collecting taxes. There's a line in the Conservatives there where they plan to cancel industrial carbon pricing. And we have treaties and trade agreements with countries who require carbon pricing for our industry. And if we don't have it, that results in tariffs for us. He's not adding that cost into his platform. He's just costing it domestically. He doesn't tell us how much that might cost us.
Yeah.
If he scraps that industrial pricing. And it also limits the amount of people we can trade with. So he's marrying us to Russia and the U.S., without having industrial pricing, and it becomes more and more costly for us to trade with other people.
I'd like to just touch on that for a second. Yeah. If you guys remember last year around this time, maybe a bit earlier, Ukraine wanted to sign a new free trade deal with Canada. And a lot of Conservatives were saying, oh, they believed him when he said, oh, we won't vote for this. The Conservatives are not on board because it says carbon pricing in there. The carbon pricing in there is so that they can be compliant with other free trade deals. He knows this too. He was just being manipulative about it, especially making it sound like that there's never been any carbon mentioned in their other free trade agreements going back years and years. Just to remind everybody, it's not just about preventing emissions in Canada and setting up that deterrent. It's also about having it in the contracts for when we deal with other countries. Now, when we talk about Pierre's intention or our perception of his intention to marry us to Russia and the US, I think that's evident in his platform as well. He doesn't address the Trump factor like Carney's did.
No. And so Christine, for full disclosure, Christine and I are disagreeing on tariffs at the moment, how they work, who's going to be paying for the budget line of the $20 billion that is included in both platforms. We disagree. I disagree. I've been disagreeing with people on TikTok. We both need to go away and really wrap our heads around it to make sure that we've got it right before we discuss it any further. But the $20 billion in tariffs in both projected platforms, the difference is Pierre's putting his into the direct revenue stream, whereas Carney is setting that aside to support businesses and workers.
I would also like to take this opportunity to apologize again for my egregious error this morning of making videos being super, super boldly wrong. I've made a correction video and I was totally wrong. And you know what? Like, it's going to happen. I'm going to be wrong.
I'm going to be wrong
again before we wrap up and say goodbye. There's nothing wrong with being wrong. I think that the fear of being wrong really stops people from putting themselves out there. And I'm not afraid to be wrong. It's going to happen. Everybody's wrong. Anybody says that they're not wrong is just not honest.
I think the issue is that it's not so much being wrong. It's the reaction you get from people when you're wrong. I have somebody being really like snotty to me because we're disagreeing. And it's like, I have to go back and make sure that I've got my information straight because that you get condescending to each other, right? Like,
yeah,
be so silly, blah, blah, blah. And it's okay to be wrong. It's just got to make sure that I got the information right. So anyways, I just want to make a point that the $20 billion that is included in both platforms is being treated very differently. And my point with the conservatives is because it's part of their accounting for their general revenue stream, what happens if Trump all of a sudden decides no tariffs? What happens?
Yeah.
What happens? Yeah. How are you going to pay for this stuff? That's another extra $20 billion on top of what you're already, and might I add, Mr. I'm going to balance the budget right away. He's going to run 4 years of deficit. 4 years of deficit.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. I feel like he wasn't even going to release anything until he got so much pressure about not releasing it. I really don't think that he would. Because like we talked about the difference between spending and investing. One sec, let's read from Joe. As long as Christy knows I'm right, that's when
I'm
she was
okay
wrong. Joe, did you see me being wrong this morning? I was totally wrong. And it was a sloppy wrong, too. I can't even excuse this. It was a complete sloppy wrong.
You said 20 million instead of 20 billion?
Yeah. Because first of all, I should have questioned that, right?
Yeah.
Anyways.
Yeah.
Anyways, I think that and Carney had called it out, too. Did you see Carney's reaction? Pierre's got some phantom numbers and this guy's a joke and this is not time for a joke. This is Trump. When he says stuff like that, I think a lot of people think that he's hyper-focused on Trump. And now I have something I haven't brought up to anybody else before. You guys tell me if you disagree. Mm-hmm. I haven't floated this by anybody yet.
Yeah.
I don't believe he's talking about just Trump. I think he's talking more so about the Trump effect because this isn't just between Canada and the United States. This is the United States and the world. And I think that there's going to be a lot of different trade agreements because of this. And we're not going internationally. We are still keeping it in Canada. But I think that a lot of people hear Carney talk about Trump and just go to the United States and don't consider that the Trump effect is affecting the world that we trade with and not just one country. Just because we trade with them the most, I think it's naive not to consider the Trump effect in all the countries.
I don't even think he's really considering the Trump effect necessarily, as he sees this as an opportunity for Canada to build its own brand, for Canada to build and take a seat at the adults. I say this all the time, move from the kids' table to the adults' table at Thanksgiving, right? That's where he's trying to position us. And I think that he views this as an opportunity to shed our relationship with the U.S. And he's taking it as that opportunity because honestly, the U.S. has held us back.
Yes, I agree with you. I totally agree with you. I just believe that the reason that he has an opportunity is because of how Trump is treating all of the countries and not just us. Yeah. And I think a lot of people are short-sighted and just think that this is between just Trump and Carney. And I don't believe that it is.
Well, and I think Pierre's policy is way too domestic.
Some dude says, I feel Carney means Trump
economics.
Means Trump economics. Yeah, that's what I'm talking about, the Trump effect. Essentially, that's what I'm talking about, the Trump economics. Yeah.
Yeah. What he said, too, is that you don't cut your way out of a crisis. And that's the thing, is that the conservatives want austerity. And all it does is hurt people further. it got services. And then when things improve, the next government that comes along has to reinvest into all of those services. Like, for instance, a point was made in the Liberal platform is that after a decade of Harper cuts to the federal service, they had to invest some of that operational money that we saw that was invested or put in by the Trudeau Liberals was to support the federal service and bring it back up to the levels that it was before Harper made all the cuts. And that's another thing, too. He complains about all the consultants that the federal government uses. That's because Harper tried to privatize as much of the federal service as he could, and they needed those consultants. They needed those people because they didn't have it in-house.
Yeah.
So they were using private sector. They needed to because they needed to bridge that gap in the services that they cut. It's like healthcare too. Harper cut $36 billion in healthcare. They needed to fund healthcare up to the levels it was, and then they have to fund it more to bring it up to current day.
Now, to be clear, I don't believe that there isn't any opportunity to cut in where the federal people are spending our money. I know that didn't come out right, but I think that there are opportunities. I think in theory, the DOGE idea, government efficiency, I think in theory, that's a good idea to look and to see where you could be more efficient. All businesses do that. I think that the states did it wrong. That wasn't efficient the way that they were looking at it. But I don't believe that it's reasonable to believe that nothing can be cut. I just think that when the conservatives take that and they run with it, they take, okay, we have an opportunity, and they spin that to get people to believe that there's just such wasteful spin. Like, I think it's a little bit of hyperbole a lot of times.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And I think that they always talk about bloated government because they don't want any government intervention.
Can I just say, they talk about bloated government. How big is that man's cabinet?
Yeah, I know.
Pierre Poilievre. How big? How many people does he have around him? He has 70-something people. I'm going to say it wrong.
Shadow cabinet.
He's going to make a video to say, look, Christy was wrong again.
Yeah.
But he's got over 70 people. So I think it's 73. How many does Carney have? And I know that Carney has a smaller than usual, but usually it's in like the mid to high 30s, not in the 70s.
Jesus, Pierre's got two deputy leaders. Like, why does he need two deputy leaders? Is he going to have two deputy prime ministers too?
Perhaps if he only had one and there isn't two people maybe disagreeing, maybe his campaign would be going better. I don't know. I'm just saying that the Corey tonight seems to be a very loud critic of his. And I'm I'm going to say something else about Pierre's platform too. So when we talk about just cuts affect the people who need the help the most. Cuts affect the most vulnerable in society. The cuts don't hurt a certain section of people. They hurt the section of people who need the help the most. And then he puts in, you can put extra $5,000 into your TFSA. So not only do his cuts hurt the people who are already hurting the most in the bank account area, but the $5,000 helps people who don't need help.
Yeah.
In my opinion.
Yeah. And can we just talk for a minute about his housing plan? People keep saying, oh, it's going to be, he's going to help people get into houses. He's going to help. How the hell does the private sector, who caused the problems to begin with, fix the problems in the housing market?
You know what I would love? And here's the thing, because Carney didn't address this either. And if he did, I apologize for missing it. Please correct me. But I want them to, and Jagmeet has addressed this. I don't know if it's in his platform or not, but it's a problem that 1 in 5 houses are owned by somebody who does not need a house. If you had a more balanced system, you limited the amount of houses somebody could buy, you would see that reflected in the price. But right now, we're being priced into a market where only people with money can. And then once you have that house, now I have equity. Now I can go to the bank and I can get a loan. Now I can get another house. Hey, great for me. And I'm going to take a page out of Pierre's book and say, I'll be so generous and I'll rent it to somebody and helping them out. You're not helping them out. You're contributing to a housing system that's making it unaffordable.
I think the idea is that with that amount of supply, and then he is protecting that supply to Carney's plan protects that supply from corporations because
he talks more about social housing too.
Yeah. And he's very focused on giving the breaks to the actual home buyer, whereas Pierre's gives breaks to the developer. It gives breaks to the builder. It doesn't give breaks to the homeowner directly. His idea is that old trickle-down idea. You give all the breaks to the developer and the builder, and those will trickle down to the homeowner. But we from Vancouver know that that does not work.
Listen, anybody who's ever met people in person knows that wouldn't work, because the concept of trickle-down only works if people have empathy and if they aren't greedy. And if we aren't pushed by a system that benefits when we want to have something nicer than our neighbors.
Yeah. And so I think that by having all this supply, so Carney gets in, they build all this supply, it's protected supply, it will bring down housing value. Overinflated, and this is going to be hard for some people to hear, your assets are overinflated. There is no reason. I live in a 100-year-old house. It was built in 1910. It was an old Sears Roebuck house that was shipped up here on the rail and prefab house. And it has single pane windows and it's on a nice piece of property. And sure, it's a nice neighborhood. It's appraised at $4.5 million. $4.5 million. There is no way this house is worth $4.5 million.
My house isn't worth what it's appraised for either. I'm going to be honest with you.
Yeah. And it's because of the land that it's sitting on. Most of it is the land. The house itself is only worth about $110,000 in the appraisal, but the land is appraised at over $4 million. It's just a city lot.
Yeah.
That's ridiculous.
I know.
And so Pierre wants to divest of all the federal land. He wants to sell it off to developers. He's not being the developer. He wants to sell that federal land to developers who are going to add their 20% profit on it, profit margin. Then when they hire the builders, going to have their 20% profit margin. Then you've got your subtrades who have all of their profit margins on there. That's not going to bring down the cost of the house. It's going to keep inflating the house. And the stock is not protected.
Yeah. And so I asked a question. I made a video because I saw on Pierre's plan that he's planning on having all of this revenue from all the new houses. So I was like, hey, where does that revenue come from? How does the federal government make? He had planned for over $1 billion this year, over $3 billion for the next fiscal, and then over $4 billion after that and after that. Mm-hmm. And politics and planning, I tagged her in it because I knew she was talking about how when you were talking about all those steps along the way of building a house, they're all paying taxes along the way too.
Yeah.
She said that the GST is 100% rebate, and we don't know that he's looking to cancel that, but that could be, if they got rid of the rebate, that could be part of the going to the revenue, or maybe they just think that with this rebate, they're going to make so much tax money of building this many houses at once to generate that much money.
Sorry, but the builder is not the one that pays all the GST. Every trade charges GST. So I have a painting company. I don't get a break on that GST.
Yeah, exactly.
I still have to collect that GST from the homeowner. I still have to charge the builder that GST and collect it and submit it to the government. I'm not going to get a break on that GST. The builder will get the break. But I won't get the break. And I still pay the GST on all the supplies that I need to carry out those painting contracts and my eco fees and my sales tax. I'm still paying taxes on all of those. This is only going to help the builder.
Yeah.
It's not even going to help all the subtrades who make less than the builder.
I think that was the answer when I said, how are they going to make these billions of dollars? And she was talking about how every single step of the way, every sub trade contributes. So if they're building that much more, maybe that's what they're planning on. I will say, since I rag on Pierre Poilievre and the conservatives all the time, I did see something I liked in his platform that I haven't seen in the other platforms. I haven't even heard other politicians talk about it. And I do believe that this is something that I do agree strongly with conservatives that other left-leaning parties don't. And that is plain language. Mm-hmm. Conservatives had written into their platform that agreements in housing everything had to be written in plain language. And I think that is fantastic, not just from an understanding point of view, but from a cost point of view. If you get rid of all of those extra words, you're going to save money. You are, in my opinion. So kudos to the conservatives. I like that. I would like to hear other parties talking about that. I would like to hear other parties running their administrations like that too. I think that Joe Biden did when he took office. He told his administration, if your grandmother wouldn't understand it, you use a different word.
Yeah.
So something that I am passionate about. So that I think the conservatives got that part right. I would also say too, if I had a criticism of the liberals in general, not personally, the, what do you call it? The rich guy tax, the capital gains tax.
Gains inclusion rate.
Yeah. I think that in crisis time, I think you should be able to lean on your richer citizens to be able to help out. I understand why he did it. That's what I disagree with. I'm happy personally, but
I think
in general, I would say, no, you shouldn't do that. Let the rich guys pay the extra tax. Here's the thing. When you, and this is what I say to conservatives who think everybody should be exactly equal and not equitable. Do you know what I mean? If you're going on a road trip with your family, let's say you're going up to the cottage and you're taking all the stuff from your car into the cottage, you're not making grandma and the toddler carry the same amount of weight as dad is carrying.
Yeah.
Because dad has more muscles. I think in an economy, I think richer people are the people with the muscles. And I think that they should carry more weight, in my opinion.
Yeah. But then again, if something's going to be incredibly divisive and you can accomplish the same thing with another avenue, then what should do that? That's the thing. As more and more people were studying this capital gains hike, we forget that a lot of small businesses incorporate and pay with capital gains.
That's true.
And dentists, doctors, film people, Teamsters, people who are self-employed, that's a way that they take money out of their businesses. And they also hold retirements in their corporations that could get dinged. It was a big complaint with the doctors. Like, doctors were not very happy with that capital gains inclusion hike. I hear what you're saying, and I'm all for taxing the rich. But I think that if we can do it, because of the way our tax systems have been set up and people's corporations have been set up, it might have impacted more people than we thought. And I am all for increasing wealthy people's tax revenues. But if we can find another way to accomplish the same thing without giving somebody an opportunity to poison the policy, then why wouldn't we do that? It's the same principle of the carbon tax. I got into a lot of hot water with some of my mutuals back in October when Jagmeet Singh said, I'm not going to run on a carbon tax. And everybody was like, how could you do that? You're a leftist. How could you do that? You're supposed to be for climate change. And I said, look, Pierre's poisoned that policy so bad. If you don't have uptake by the general populace and it's going to continue to be a political hot potato for the foreseeable future and nobody's going to adopt it willingly, there's a point where you have to say, you know what? This isn't working. We need to find another way to achieve the same goal.
Just like David Eby did when he changed his mind about his wildly unpopular suggestion of giving up power. We even supported that too. But he said, listen, like, there's too many people who don't. It's too noisy. It's distracting. We can't get to why I wanted it in the first place. So forget about it.
Yeah.
We'll find another way. I think that is a fantastic leadership quality. Instead of, like, right now, what we're seeing in the state, we're seeing that man dig his orange heels in and say, no, I'm not wrong. No, I'm not wrong. No, I'm not wrong. The Dow's starting to come up today. Did you see it yesterday? Like, it's not good out there.
Dropped 1,000 yesterday.
Yeah. So I do think that changing direction, even if you think you're right, but recognizing that you don't have the support, I think that's a good leadership thing. I don't know if Pierre would do that. We can't even see him pivot away from Justin.
No. No, he's going to use the notwithstanding clause. And I haven't actually made a video on the notwithstanding clause. I intend to. I've had several people reach out and ask me to talk about it. Pierre's going to use the notwithstanding clause. He's not a unifier. He's not looking to work with anyone. He isn't looking to impose. He wants to impose the military bases on Nunavut and the Arctic. He wants to impose the pipeline on Quebec. He wants to impose pipelines on Indigenous people. He is not looking for community. He is not looking for cooperation because he doesn't know how to get it. He only knows how to use a big stick, and that's his intention. And we see it with the way that he governs his party, whereas Carney is somebody who's used to bringing together people that he necessarily may not agree with, but he's able to get them together and work together for the common good in a way that's unifying. Even if he vehemently disagrees with them on things, he's really good at finding common ground. Pierre doesn't have that quality.
I think that what made Pierre is that he was so good at being an attack dog, right? I've seen a lot of people talking about this lately as they speculate on how his campaign is going to succeed. But he was an attack dog. He's very good at, hey, this is what's wrong. When that's your job for a long time and all you have to do is, I think I'd be really good at that job too, actually. All you have to do is tell the guy in charge what you disagree with. If you're the prime minister, first of all, you have to be the guy who's going to be disagreed with all the time. And I don't know if that man can take it. Mm-hmm. I really don't. Do you know what I mean? You go from being the guy who is allowed to say, you're wrong on this, you're wrong on this, to the guy taking it. Okay, I'm wrong about this. Because you can't do it as much when you're the prime minister. When you're the prime minister, you're the coach of the entire team, not just yours. And Pierre isn't pivoting away from the just his. And I think that lends to a lot of this emotion that we hear from both sides. We hear it, but it'll lend it to his side of, oh, don't worry about the other side. As soon as we win, we won't have to worry about them. Something magical is going to happen to all these people, that they're going to stop thinking the way that they're thinking, or they're going to stop living next to us or something. It's ridiculous. Anybody who thinks that. People on the left and the right think that. Yeah. They think that this is some sort of magical election. Remember what I told you when the Seafox guy said, oh, don't worry, after Monday, we don't have to hear about this anymore. And I think in general, there's going to be less on television and less that people who aren't political nerds that talk about it all the time. There's going to be less in the public. It's still going to happen. People are still passionate. Conservatives are not going to not be conservative on April 29th. Everybody's not going to turn to the winner's side just because they won. This never happened in history. It's unrealistic.
Yeah, they're already primed to be aggressive. They already have been given the permission to be aggressive and violent and hostile. And they're not going to go, oh, we lost. Oh,
no.
Better luck next time. No, they're going to do exactly what the MAGAs did down in the U.S. to Joe Biden throughout his entire term. And we're going to get that from the right-wing media ecosystem up here, too. They're going to do the same thing. They're going to continually hammer at the liberals if they win. Now, if Pierre wins, the left will do it as well. The left will be out protesting and fighting. Like, this is not going to go down anytime soon. And the thing is that we're going to be goaded. If it goes the other way and Pierre wins the majority, there's going to be a lot of goading and a lot of crowing and a lot of
Schadenfreude.
Poking the bear, like deliberately poking the bear to get, because they're still resentful. Even though Pierre wins, it doesn't, they're going to find, everybody knows that only feeds you for a minute or two, right? Like when you're right, it only feeds you for a minute or two. All that aggression and anger and stuff that's still there.
Conservatives are already spreading word that if you're given a pencil at the ballot box, you're going to get your vote erased, right?
I think that just demonstrates how many people have never voted before. I really do. I really do. Or have never visited the Elections Canada website before. It's just what I think. I will say, though, whoever wins is going to be dealing with a Donald Trump economy or a Donald Trump affected economy. And the changes we're about to go through, regardless of who wins, I think a lot of people think that if they vote conservative, correct me if I'm wrong, conservatives, it feels like you guys vote that way so that you can turn the clock back into a more comfortable time. And hey, man, I would love to go back to 2019 too. 2019 was rocking, but we can't. And we're facing not only just a post-pandemic time, but we're facing a Trump economy time where he is disrupting trades and encouraging other people to find new trades. It's going to be fucking hard. It really is. We're about to face the biggest. And let me tell you something. As somebody who ran a grocery store for decades, whenever we would change around where the stuff in the aisle was, people don't take change.
Oh, I don't like that.
People do not take change at all.
But you should see that I was
general.
I was in Costco yesterday. It's like, I'm looking for the coffees always in the aisle across from the freezer. And I'm like, where's the coffee? Where's the coffee? And I'm going through the aisles and I'm like, I'm getting more agitated. And I know that it's ridiculous that I'm agitated, but it's like, where's the goddamn coffee?
You don't understand. I've had people in tears, in actual tears. And I've almost been the person in tears when my head office would be like, hey, your store is going to do this. And I'm like, oh, please don't make me do this. Please don't make me. Not only not, it's a ton of fucking work too. It is a ton of work. But yeah. Really, it was about the customers and the customer reaction and how much they're going to not be happy with me and my staff. And anyways,
it's a really good segue into the vision Carney has for the country. It's very different than anything anybody's ever proposed. And it's going to take us in a completely different direction. And there's going to be a lot of change. And with that change, there's going to be a lot of people, especially self-identify as conservatives, who are going to have a really hard time with that because they don't like change. They feel anything new is a threat. Anything different is a threat. And so they're going to be working overtime to discredit him because it's going to be very fast and it's going to be fast and it's going to be massive and it's going to be bold.
Yes.
And it has to be because we have an emerging superpower with China. The whole world order is changing. We are going to go through the Great Reset, just not the Great Reset that everybody had thought it was going to be. This is going to be an absolute new world order where we're going to have a new superpower and the imperialism of the U.S. is going to die. We are moving away from colonization because really the U.S. is just an offshoot of Great Britain imperialism. It just transferred power. World War II transferred imperialism from the UK to the US. We're moving away from that entirely. China's going to emerge as the new superpower, and everybody's jockeying for position in the new industrial revolution that's happening with AI and clean tech. Everybody's jockeying for position right now. So things are going to move fast. They're going to be big. They're going to be bold. And it's going to piss a lot of people off.
When you talk about how conservatives figure that everything new is a threat to, I'm going to say it isn't just conservatives. Mm-hmm. It's old people, regardless of their politics.
Mm, yeah, that's true.
Every single time my father gets into my car, every single time my father gets into my car, makes a noise of, hey, put your seatbelt on. And my dad swears at it and then it calls the thing a bottle opener again. That change happened in the 80s, man, in the 80s. And I still remember when they made seatbelts legal. And I remember how.
Oh, I remember it too.
I remember how pissed he was. Oh, and today, you know,
we're so mad.
Decades later, he's still bitching about it.
Yeah.
Change isn't easy for everybody. I hope that whoever is the next prime minister is, I think that we have a better shot with Carney of recognizing that people are going to be going through change. I think Pierre's denying that people are going to be going through change, but I hope that Carney puts somebody in place. I think that he should have a press secretary or somebody to keep Canadians involved in normal language that they can understand, not some politician thing. I think that the communication, I think my biggest criticism of Justin Trudeau during COVID, even if I agreed with what he was doing, I thought his communication was shit. I thought that he didn't acknowledge all of the quick turns and pivots. If you don't acknowledge them, you feel bullshitty. If you don't take people from the hand and explain the change, you just go, that's what we did yesterday and this is what we're doing today. Just good. What's going to happen in a new economy? You don't take people on that journey, they're going to have a harder time with it. Change is hard anyways.
Yeah.
So Carney, if you're listening, get a good communications person in place to talk to Canadians to make sure that you're communicating as much and being as transparent and acknowledging what the change is, not just what the new reality is.
I don't think we're going to have too much issue around that. Would I really?
I disagree wholeheartedly because of COVID. And
but Carney wasn't at the helm in COVID. Carney's a different guy than Trudeau.
I didn't think that's what you meant. I thought you meant that people just wouldn't need the communication as much. And I think that communication is the most important part of change.
Of course. Yeah, of course. when you're a change agent, it's very important to be able to talk about the changes that are happening and to make sure everybody understands what's happening. The difference between Carney and Trudeau, though, is that Trudeau had never been through anything like that. And yes. Carney has managed through crises. So he's managed economies through crises, two of them, and he's dealt with the taxpayers. In fact, after they voted for Brexit, it wasn't politicians that held the hands of the UK taxpayers. Yep. It was Carney. Carney yep. was the one. And actually, somebody who lives in the UK said he looked very gray that morning. He looked very gray. He was very calm. He projected calm and confidence, but he said he was very gray. But he gave the people of the United Kingdom the safety that they were craving in that moment. So I think that he'll be okay that way. I hear what you're saying.
No, I agree with you. With his experience of having to go through crises before, and I also think that being calm in the eye of a storm is a great mark of a leader too. If the leader is panicking, everybody is going to panic. If the leader is calm, even if the other people are feeling anxiety, you mirror your leader often.
Yeah, absolutely. And you can see that in his rallies. You can see that in the energy that he brings. We were talking about on Sunday when we went for coffee, Carney, to me, embodies the way Canada used to be, yeah. which is you fight hard for your ideas, but at the end of the day, you shake hands and you go for a beer, because it wasn't that big of a difference between us. The differences weren't chasms, weren't deal breakers.
I think back then our differences of opinion were based in the same reality, yeah. and now they aren't. Now we don't have differences of opinion. We have different realities.
Yeah. And we weren't talking about human rights and things like that, because those are not differences. That's not politics. When I talk about politics, I'm talking like, should we fund that school?
Yeah.
Should we build more roads? Should we invest more in our military? That's politics.
But it has evolved too, because anytime there's so many people who will not even listen to politics from somebody on the other side because of the differences in reality. Oh, you're conservative? I'm not even going to talk to you. Oh, you're a liberal? That automatically means that you have a mental illness, so you're not credible.
Yeah.
There's too many people that view the differences as the wall that is not getting passed. I think that hurts us too.
But I would posit that those people are not talking politics. Most of the time, that's character assassination. They're looking to character assassinate the person that they're disagreeing with. They're not actually looking for a good faith conversation around politics.
That's true.
I don't think that people's rights are politics. That is not, like I said, whether we fund schools or we build hospitals or we increase mental health supports, those are politics, not does that person deserve to have rights. That's not politics.
I want to agree with you so bad, but I'm going to say that's the way that it should be.
Yeah.
And that certain people have taken it into the political arena where it does not belong.
Mm-hmm.
I agree with you. It doesn't belong there. I agree that it shouldn't be like that.
Yeah.
I disagree that it isn't like that for some politicians. I wish it was different. I wish I could mm-hmm. say that 100% I agree with you, but yeah. I think it's more of a should be instead of the way that it really is, unfortunately.
Yeah. But that's the way we need to keep talking about it, because that's the way it should be.
And yes.
So we need to move it away from where it is now to the arena where it should be, and have all the principles and the parameters around it the way it's supposed to be.
Yes.
Not the way it is now.
I agree with you. And I think that we have this opportunity okay. in time to be able to move that needle closer to the should be's, closer to the way that it used to be, because you've never had this many people talking about politics ever.
Yeah. See, I'm
just like, you haven't.
I'm looking at the chat on Maple Minds right now, and there's quite a few conservatives in there that are just trying to poke people who are leftists, trying to, they're chirping, which whatever, but you can see by the behavior, they're there to upset,
disrupt
people and disrupt,
yep.
not to have good faith conversations. And well, that's where yep. we're at right now.
Yeah.
And you can't move forward when you have a whole group of people who will not come to the table for a good faith conversation.
And a lot of the conversation that comes from that side, if you look at their influencers, like one of the biggest influencers in Canada, that Mario guy,
oh,
pushes bullshit.
Yeah.
That, and none of them correct their bullshit. at the time they push it, they're like, it could be true. I'm not saying it's true. Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah.
And they it's just about planting the seed, and then they push it out there. Oh, look at this thing that was passed around the jails. Total bullshit.
Yeah.
And none of them said, oh, you know what? I've taken my video down because I've given misinformation. They just leave it out there, and then the seed's out there and it grows anyways. Bullshit.
Yeah. Just quickly. Yes. Some people.
Oh my God. It's 5-2.
Yeah. All these people in the chat are talking about the turnout on the weekend, and we've had the biggest turnout ever for advanced polls. 25% of voters have voted already.
That's amazing.
7.3 million people. And the exit polls, now, they're not like super scientific with a lot of data. They just basically asked people, how did you vote? Shows that the Liberals have a 12-point lead coming out of the advanced polls. It's still up in the air, but everything I see in the numbers, there's no path for the Conservatives to get a majority. There is a path for a possible minority, but it's only like 7%, according to 338. There's some new polls that have just hit the aggregates that have just adjusted the numbers again. And they're still holding strong in Ontario. The Bloc has picked up a few seats in Quebec, which has diminished the Liberals. And the majority they're now projecting on 338 is around 185 to 190 seats. And Eric Grenier from the CBC poll tracker, he and Philip Fournier, who is from 338, do a podcast called The Numbers, which is very informative. It's a half-hour podcast. They talk about the polls, and they discuss what the polls say to them and how they're interpreting things. And it's a very good show for those who don't know it. It's called The Numbers. It's really informative. I really like it a lot.
Do you think that we'll end up with another Liberal NDP coalition / agreement? What was it again? It wasn't
supply and confidence.
That's it. That's what
NDP doesn't have enough seats projected at this moment. We'll be lucky if the NDP has standing after this. And
yeah, there's a lot of people predicting that the NDP might lose their party status. There's a lot of people predicting that Jagmeet might lose his seat. I don't know.
There's some really fishy shenanigans going on behind the scenes that are really hurting them. And there's an article that was put out last week in the Vancouver Sun. It was a Liberal candidate in one of the ridings out here in BC has launched a complaint with Elections Canada for the NDP putting out false polling numbers. Not that anything's going to happen with it, but in that article, they're talking that the Sun said that there's actually an old progressive conservative liberal strategist, political strategist that's helping them out, which is, I think, contributing to their conservative sounding messaging, and that it's really turning off their base. It's hard to say whether they're going to turn this around or not. I know that Jagmeet's come back to BC because the support has imploded in BC, which is where they got most of their seats the last time. And it's definitely imploded on the island because Pierre spent a lot of time on the island and in the interior of BC over the last 2 years trying to flip BC. So right now we're tied in BC here, 20% support for the
Liberals. And that changed because a couple of weeks ago we were, it was like that about a month ago. And then it went a bit more Liberal and then it regressed back to 2020 again.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think most of that is Northern BC, the interior and the island.
Yeah.
Or mainland, not so much, but as soon as you leave the city, it's all different.
Yeah. He spent a lot of money and a lot of time on Vancouver Island.
A lot.
It's hard to say how it's all going to shake out, but so far the numbers are still holding that the Liberals are in the lead. And remember, popular vote doesn't necessarily translate into seats, right? Because each province has only so many seats, and that's based on population and how many. I think this writings are about 135 to 140,000, depending. So that's what it's based on, not
the number of seats that your party can win, not how many people vote for you. So to get a majority, they need to win 172. Is that right?
I think it's high. Oh, yeah. 172.
Yeah, I think it's 172.
Right. 343. There's 343.
seats. Yeah. So if they win 172 seats, then they can form a majority government. If they have more seats than everybody else but don't get to 172, then it's a minority government where they would need the cooperation of other parties.
I think it's really sad about the NDP right now. Like, it's disappointing and sad because they brought in dental care. They brought in, if it wasn't for them, we wouldn't have that dental.
Yes. Yeah.
And what was the other thing that they brought in? Help my memory.
Obamacare.
Yes. We wouldn't have.
I'd like to say something else about that too. So Pierre said, and Mark Carney had echoed what I'm about to say, because Pierre said, I'm not going to cut for anybody who already has that stuff. Just nobody else will get it. What?
Yeah.
I understand. So okay, you're grandfathered in, but I think not giving it to anybody else, I think, is a huge miss.
Oh, yeah. He's not going to expand any of those programs.
Yeah.
Carney's going to expand them all. He said he's going to expand them all. And that's the difference, Pierre.
So, like, example, the dental care, I don't think our age group is in there yet, are they?
Yeah, we should
are
be
we?
Now. I think so.
Oh, I should go look.
Maybe I should go look, too.
Yeah. My youngest is hooked up, but I've got to go and have a look for us.
My dad's hooked up, but I haven't looked for me yet. But they did it in, like, stages. And so what Pierre's saying is, okay, you already have it. We're just not going to do any more stages to make sure that everybody's covered.
Yeah.
So I should have been more clear on that. You said it better than I did. I'm pointing the wrong way.
I moved everybody around. That's why.
I didn't notice that nobody's offering to remove the paid taxpayer lunches, the lunches that are paid for by the taxpayer for the MPs. We pay for their lunches every day.
We shouldn't.
Nope.
We shouldn't.
Nope.
We
get enough money.
Yep. When I said that I think that there are places in government efficiency that you can cut, that's something I'd cut. Why am I paying for somebody else to eat?
Why am I paying?
I'm not trying to be a dick about it. I'm just saying no other job. If you're at the superstore, the people at the superstore aren't charging extra for your groceries so that you can pay for their staff's lunch.
Yeah. Yeah. So there is absolutely bloat. And the thing about Carney is that he's from the private sector and he treats taxpayer dollars like they're taxpayer dollars. He doesn't treat them like they're government revenue. And that's what I really like about him. I love the fact that he stood on the stage and said, the Charter of Rights and Freedoms is there to protect Canadians from people like me.
Yeah. As he said, like, and people like us, like the politicians on the stage.
Yeah.
And one last thing before we wrap up and I get onto my other crap. When we talked about Pierre using the notwithstanding clause, so what that does is it bypasses the charter in order to get what you want. What he wants is to put in a rule for the worst murderers and stuff to not be eligible for parole. These guys aren't getting parole anyways. But and he couldn't even answer. Sorry, go ahead.
No, but he said crime. That's all. He didn't actually specify. Like, I watched it where he announced it. He says, we're going to rein in crime. He didn't specify what kind of crime or what, like, he's, you know what I mean?
He gave an example. He gave an example that's not the same as setting a parameter. So you don't know what that parameter would be as you're giving up your rights. All you're doing is stoking a base that already believes that a certain group of people aren't deserving of human treatment anyways, and then saying that's what we're going to do to them. I think a test of the court system, I think it's scary as, and I think it's a little bit like how Trump is treating the courts in the states of seeing how much he can get away with. I think the notwithstanding clause is a possibility of the same sort of avenue, but I'm not saying he is. I'm just saying it's a possibility.
And the last thing I want to say to people out there is that what Pierre is offering is trickle-down economics. Carney is not offering trickle-down economics. It is not trickle-down economics. Pierre, it believes in the free market. He is a student and a worshiper of Milton Friedman, who is like the worst economist ever, who is responsible for the equity and inequality gaps that we are now, the wealth inequality gaps that we are seeing in the UK, in Canada, in the US, in Australia, in New Zealand. It is directly traced back to Milton Friedman. And Pierre worships the guy.
Worship. You've mentioned him many times. I saw your video. Was it your video or a video you sent me?
It was this video I sent you. And he is offering nothing but repackaged neoliberalism and trickle-down economics. It is not change. That is not change, because the fundamental economic structure behind it is going to be the exact same, whereas Carney's is different. Carney's is much more of a communitarian. He is more of a market socialist. He believes in government interventions and he believes in guardrails in the free market. That is real change. That is real change. With Pierre, you're going to get more oligopolies. You're going to get more consolidation of power for corporations. You're going to get more of that same trickle-down economics that brought us to where we are now.
I also believe that you don't have as strong of a defense against Donald Trump and his desires for our country. Just saying, I know it hasn't come up in a while, but...
They're part of the IDU, so Pierre Poilievre would just like work with the Republicans to give Trump what he wants. Maybe not fully Canada, but a lot of it, like the resources.
We have a better shot of Carney standing up to Trump than somebody who's on Trump's team standing up to Trump. Just saying.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Because the conservatives, they say the GOP is a threat, wink, wink, but they don't act like they're a real threat to the country.
No. I wish we could talk about international stuff because I've been watching them like a hawk and they got, they're so messy down there. They're so messy. Okay. I think it's important to talk about Canada since we're only 6 days away. By the time we go live again on Friday, we're only going to be a few days away.
Yeah.
One last question before we wrap it up. Do you think the fact that Pierre released his platform after early voting hurt him?
Yeah, I do. It doesn't hurt him with the people who were already going to vote for him no matter what, but it's going to hurt him with the people who are waiting to vote on the 28th. And they were seeing what he came up. Those are the people who are voting by platform. And especially the people who he promised he wasn't going to run deficits. I'm wondering what kind of mental gymnastics they're going to do right now to rationalize those deficits.
Yeah.
Because when liberals run deficits, it's bad. When conservatives run deficits, hey, maybe that's not such a bad thing after all.
No,
it's not something for it. I can find it.
Oh, is it not loaded on the website yet?
You can. No, it's on the website.
It's only two pages long, though.
No, it isn't. It's 30 pages long.
Is it?
Yeah. When you go to the website, let me walk y'all through this.
Yes, please.
Arnie's is 67 pages, but Pierre's is 30. So on his page of our plan, you click our plan, then you're going to see a whole bunch of different other plans of stuff that's like little PC plans. And then you're going to see there's a thing that says download the full plan here.
Okay.
And that's where you find it.
Okay.
And if you go to page like 27 or something, it's got the chart of all of the spending.
Okay. I'm going to take one last question from the chat and then we should wrap it up. So Sacred North Soap Company asks, why did he wait so long? Because he doesn't, it's the same thing John Rusted did. He didn't want anybody to know what was in it. He doesn't want anybody to know what he's going to cut. He doesn't want anybody to know how much it's going to cost. And he doesn't want the economists to pick it apart. He doesn't want Carney picking it apart because Carney can pick it apart.
Did you see what Carney said? Carney said it's a joke. I think this is the strongest language we've heard, correct me if I'm wrong, that we've heard Carney use against Poilievre because he's got phantom numbers and it's a joke. All those numbers a joke. And he gave a shitty excuse too. He's like, I don't want them to copy me. They're already out. They already had theirs out.
Somebody said it looked like they just sat down at the kitchen table on Saturday night and hammered something out.
How can you be begging the country for an election and not have this ready already? How?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Anyway, we should wrap it up. I can't do a...
That's okay. We should definitely make some time on Friday, though.
Friday, yes.
If people have questions and stuff, especially, we should do an after party and make sure that we're answering everybody's questions.
So if you tune in on Friday, we're going to be live at 1 o'clock BC time, 4 o'clock Eastern time. And then afterwards at 2 o'clock BC time, we'll go live on TikTok where people can come up and ask questions and it'll be more interactive. We'll do our regular 1 hour show, but then we'll do an after show on Friday.
Yeah.
So, are you going to do a breakdown of the platforms?
I'm not going to do, I don't know. I want to cover the notwithstanding clause. And then I was doing an overview one playlist for based on the CBC article that came out earlier last week. I haven't finished that. But this is, I'm not going to go through all, let's be real.
That's a no. It's okay. You can say no. It's fine. I was just wondering. I was just being lazy. I was going to say, you do it and then I'll duet it.
I guess I got to do my own. I did some of it, but I'm not going to go through all 67 or 30 pages. Like, I'm just not. I don't think I'm going
to. If anybody subscribes to Cole, not Cole's Substack, it's a really great breakdown of it.
Everyone, thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much. We'll see you on Friday. And then afterwards, we'll do an after show with interaction.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Don't forget to subscribe, please, to our YouTube channel